Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Breakfast weekly briefing for the week ending May 29th, the end of the week, the end of the month. Busy time once again in markets. Had some quite a bit of movement here. It looks like the S&P 3000 level, which was reached earlier in the week, will hold as we head into the close here on Friday. I'm joined once again for this roundtable by Aaron Task, the VP contributor of content and co-host of Seeking Alpha's Alpha Trader podcast, Brad Olison, VP of news, and Stephen Alfer, managing editor of news and co-host of Alpha Trader. So Aaron, why don't we start with you? What were your takeaways from the week, from the month? Where do you see things here?
All right. Well, we talked about this last week, the FOMO effect very much in play again. Certainly the start of this week, I mean, it just seemed like there was some capitulation of people who've been holding out. You mentioned S&P eclipsing 3,000. That was a big psychological barrier. Part of that, we got past the 200-day moving average, which a lot of technicians and a lot of market players were watching. And so there seemed to be a sense of like, you got to get on board. And that, of course, that probably means maybe the rally takes a rest here. But it was interesting. We saw Thursday a reversal to the downside after President Trump said he was going to have a press conference. And so there was some sell-off and you thought, oh, maybe, again, every time it seems this market takes a step back, money comes pouring in. And that happened again today when the president started to talk, didn't announce any new tariffs, and the market got back into the green. But again, it seems like the risk on trade is still in play here. How much longer that lasts? I don't know, but I don't think many people thought it would last this long.
No question. Yeah. The China thing you mentioned, geopolitical tensions from last week, a lot more movement there with Hong Kong and China and statements. And yeah, the press conference today was widely feared, I think, by many market participants that it could lead to risk off. But it appears that the biggest fears were so far unfounded. It appears there's not going to be any new tariffs and that the phase one trade deal will, for the most part, hold. All right. So there were earnings too. Stephen, what were you following there?
Not necessarily so much on the earnings front. A couple things that I've seen in the last couple weeks, kind of a point of the bears during this whole rally has been the continual pounding against the banks. The banks just kept going down or at least weren't going up. And how can you have a rally if a sustained rally without the banks doing well? And in the last 2 weeks, the banks are now, they're having a rough session today, but they're up about, the KRE is up about 30% in the last 2 weeks. So it suggests, now the banks are participating in what's been a heck of a rally. Whether that means it has legs or whether that means, the last bear has been wiped out and now it's ready to go down, I don't know.
Yeah, how far are we off the lows, the March 23rd lows? Brad, do you have any stats on that?
I think we're well off 30% off the lows here. And obviously a lot of that's been driven by some of these favorite fan names, Facebook, Alphabet, Apple, Microsoft, and Google, the top five by market cap. And, that's definitely been leading this rally. As Steve says, you need a little bit more participation if you want that extra leg higher. Where right now the top five names are the highest concentration of the S&P in history. They account for 20% of the entire market cap. Many of the Wall Street analysts are kind of in agreement that, there's only so much more that can come. And if we want to get that extra leg higher, we do need that cyclical participation. Banks are a huge part of that, as are industrials and a lot of these other names like consumer that have been beaten down in this latest crisis.
Yeah, I mean, 30% is quite a bear market rally. I don't know if anybody knows offhand if other bear markets have even had corrections like that, I guess upside corrections, because at some point, what point does it no longer become a bear market, right? I mean, if you look at what's been happening the last 6 or 8 weeks, it really has all been buying, right? And this is against a horrific backdrop of economic news that we've seen here in the U.S. with unemployment claims. Once again, this week, more than 2 million, right? There was a couple of positive, green shoots in there as well. Some states have seen people return to the workforce. Nevertheless, we're looking at 20%, north of 20% unemployment, and the market just continues to shrug that off. So, yeah, I guess that is the question, is where do we go from here?
Right. So, well, a couple of things. First of all, that 2 million jobless claims numbers, like that's down from 7, right? So, you know, the trend, you know, Wall Street looks at that and says, oh, well, you know, things are getting better. It's not as terrible, although at some point there isn't anybody left to file who hasn't already filed. I did see some stats from JP Morgan that I thought were interesting on this point, that the consumer areas that are being hardest hit by the COVID crisis, restaurants, retail, airlines, they comprise about 20% of GDP and 20% of payrolls, but only about 7% of S&P 500 operating earnings. So that, in some ways helps explain this huge disconnect we're seeing between the stock market and the economy. And that's obviously been, a thing a lot of people have been scratching their heads about, you know, for 6+ weeks. How can the stock market keep going up when the real economy is getting so bad? I don't know how much further it can go, the stock market, until people get back to work and start spending money again. We had that huge drop in spending coming after April, record low. You know, if you look under the hood of the stock market, you could make an argument that this makes, quote unquote, some sense. But again, this is a bet that we do get back to normalcy in the economy relatively soon, that it is a V-shaped recovery, that, you know, corporate earnings overall for S&P 500, you know, the street's basically saying 2020 is a wash, but 2021 is going to be a great year, a record year. If we get any signs that's not true, then there's going to be some problems with these valuations, because we've gotten to a point where valuations are stretched. That's the real concern here.
Yeah, exactly. I would add to that, just according to consensus estimates, you're looking at earnings to fall by about 40% in the next quarter over the last year. So if anything, what the market is telling you is that they're pricing the recovery way out ahead of where we are right now. You know, there's really no way that they're pricing one quarter or two quarters ahead. We're definitely looking a lot more further than that. And I would add on the disconnect issue as well. I think by focusing on the economy, we might be missing some of the point. I thought it was interesting from Rosenberg earlier this week, made the observation that the Fed's balance sheet is up $3 trillion, which happens to coincide almost precisely with the market cap recovery that we've seen in the S&P. And, you know, I think it's more than coincidence that you're having that. And that is the cue phrase he used was that, you know, it's not a V-shaped recovery, it's an L-shaped recovery, with the L standing for liquidity.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I saw just to kind of show you how far things may have gotten ahead of themselves, there was an interesting downgrade of Disney this week by Imperial Research. Disney was back up to over 120, I believe. He notes that a year ago, at its all-time high, it was at about 140. So it's come off, you know, whatever that is, 15% in the last year. But earnings estimates for 2021 are down about 75%. So you have that kind of disconnect going on. You know, I don't know how it's either going to be resolved where the economy reopens a lot faster than folks are expecting, or the stock price has to come down.
Yeah.
I don't know that it could continue that way, though.
Yeah, interesting times indeed. Okay. Well, let's move on to the segment of the show where we talk about our favorite stories or articles that we've seen on Seeking Alpha to come through the wire. How about, who wants to start? Maybe Aaron, what do you think?
There was a story, what have you prepared for a bear market and no one came, by John Gillooly. That was, you know, again, as we're talking here, I think it's very tempting and understandable to poke holes in the market and make the case that, you know, we should be way lower than we are now. But the market is telling you otherwise. And, you know, John sort of walks through that. That one caught my eye. I thought that was pretty interesting. I'm glad that Brad brought up the point Dave Rosenberg was making about the Fed's expansion of their balance sheet. You know, this is something we've talked a lot with several guests on Alpha Trader about, you know, that it's tempting to just look at expansion of the balance sheet and overlay the chart of the S&P 500 on it. But if you look at what the Fed's actually done, they haven't nearly put that much, anywhere near $3 trillion to work in financial assets, right? So I don't want to call them defenders of the Fed, but they will say, you know, like the Fed has basically just created making sure the plumbing is working, and that's what that money is doing, as opposed to the Fed directly putting money into the markets, stocks or otherwise. And Seeking Alpha actually had a story today about the Fed's buying of ETFs, and it's a relatively small number, right? In the last month, which was a great month for the market, it's almost the psychological effect of what the Fed is doing is having a greater impact than the actual money.
Yeah, I think it's 1.3 billion
was right.
Which pales in comparison to the trillions that we're talking about.
Yep.
And they're still just buying a couple of bond ETFs. It's not like they're out there buying the S&P or anything relating to equities, right?
I mean, not yet.
Right.
Yeah. Not yet. But to your point, right, Stephen, so there's the expectation or the hope that they might do that. That's the ultimate Fed put, right? That they someday might do that, but they're not doing it now. And they're sort of basically giving license to the animal spirits and people who feel like, well, don't fight the Fed, right? And it's the oldest saying on Wall Street, or maybe not the oldest because the Fed hasn't been around that long relative to Wall Street, but it's definitely worked the last 50 years. So it's just interesting that, is it a placebo effect or is it what the Fed is doing directly affecting the markets? That's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
Okay. Bradley, what about you? Stories and things.
So obviously there are a ton of stories this week. I mean, you can point to, the Modernas of the world and, more cold water was thrown on that story, in terms of them being able to get a lot of insider selling in Moderna to start the week. You had the market cap come off close to $5 billion, just with a variety of additional skeptics. But I think on a cultural side, just to kind of, bring a little levity into the conversation, I thought an interesting one was on Cody, just this Friday, where, we all remember the story of Forbes labeling Kylie Jenner a billionaire and how that got everyone all excited for the Jenner clan. But Forbes has actually come out with an effective retraction of that story just today. And she's no longer a billionaire. So that may be news to some of our listeners. And, this matters for us because, Coty is one of these larger cosmetic plays, right? And they just bought into her company. They spent, the valuation was $1.2 billion. And it looks like they, bought into something that I don't want to call it a shell game, but the financials were a little shaky. So the retraction there, I thought, was kind of interesting on a Friday, just into the weekend, some sort of, just some fun story to chew on.
Yeah. If you're into that type of thing, I guess the moral of the story is maybe that mergers involving celebrities or are maybe not all that well advised, but who knows?
She's got a lot of followers. You can't take that away from her. There's a lot of cachet.
She might not be a billionaire, but she still has a ton of social capital.
Right.
And I still think Forbes was saying she's still worth $900 million, right? So no tears being shed for Kylie Jenner, right?
She's still got $320 million in the bank. So, she's far cry from a fraud, for sure. There's still some legs there.
All right, Stephen, what about you in the story front?
I think the blow up between the president and social media in general and Twitter in particular, I'm not going to go down that political rabbit hole from which we'll never emerge, but I did post a chart this morning of Twitter versus Facebook over the last 5 years. And, Facebook is up and to the right fairly steeply and Twitter is flat to down. And I think Twitter, we're a business podcast, we're a business website. I think Twitter shareholders need to ask themselves whether management and the board there wants to score political points or whether they want to make money. And Twitter's definitely fallen behind its competitors in that media. And I happen to think Twitter is an amazing platform. I'm addicted to it. I use it. If I want to get business news, that's where I go. If I want to get sports news, that's where I want to go. It's an awesome platform, but at this point, they haven't quite figured out the whole monetization thing.
That's the key, Stephen, right? Is like, the president's on Twitter and we're all following the president on Twitter, whatever you think of him, good or bad, but Twitter hasn't figured out how to monetize this anywhere near the way that Facebook, whatever you think of the way Facebook does business, they're doing business, they're more profitable, far more profitable than Twitter. And it is, incredibly frustrating. I also think Twitter has always had the problem where people who aren't journalists or celebrities or athletes don't quite know how to use it, right? It's not so intuitive that when you go on there, you know what to do. And the kids aren't on there. It's not as hot as Instagram or now TikTok. So, you know, it's been an interesting stock to watch because it's, you know, it's had some great performance last year, you know, got down to the teens and I think went back above 30 at one point, but it's still relatively small potatoes, you know, in terms of the audience, despite its influence. Right. And again, the monetization picture, they still haven't quite figured that out yet. So I would agree with you. If you're a shareholder, you have to ask yourself, you know, is this management team really getting the most out of all the attention, right? Or bad, for good or bad, that Twitter is getting and all the, and the huge megaphone that it is and can be for the most powerful people in the world.
Mm-hmm. When did Jack Dorsey come back? He was gone for a while. He's been back a couple of years now, I think. And that was supposed to kind of reinvigorate. I think it might actually be trading above 30 now.
It's right around 30.
Yeah. But right. But so it's higher than where it was. But yeah, as far as a broad transformation, and it, to Aaron's point, if you look at its weight in terms of influence and in terms of value, I mean, me too, that's where I go just to get the first day news, right? I mean, news usually breaks on Twitter before it breaks anywhere else.
I use the Seeking Alpha platform.
I'm sorry, what is that? What is that? I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
For me, my favorite story, or one of them, I had Brad Thomas, one of the most widely followed authors on Seeking Alpha in the REIT space. Again, going back to the REIT space, which I picked on last week as well. He has a story here, a few safe haven REITs to help you sleep well at night. And for spoiler alert, I can name those for you. There's three of them. Realty Income, which is stock symbol O, Essex Property, ESS, and WP Carry, WPC. And he puts these into perspective very nicely and also just puts the whole macro picture into perspective, I thought, very well with just like, look, these are unprecedented times, but there are some things that are probably not going to go away. And doomsday predictions are very rarely, in fact, they've never come true, which is why we're still here having this conversation. So I thought that was a really good piece.
Just to go back to Twitter, because I actually am now looking at the actual chart. So I misspoke about it being in the teens last year, but it touched 45 back in 2018, got back there in September. And, you know, I'm not a chartist, but if I played one, I would say that looks like a double top to me. It was at 38 in February. Then the market fell apart, of course, and now at 31. So again, you know, Steve's larger point is, you know, it's really fared poorly compared to Facebook, but just on an absolute basis, you know, that's not a great looking chart. Yeah. I'll just say that.
Yeah, no question. Interestingly enough, I find Facebook to be far less user friendly than Twitter myself personally, but I've only gone on there very sparingly in the last couple of years, and frankly, some of this stuff on there kind of freaks me out. But
anyway. same. Yes.
I mean, this is our, you know, last, you know, podcast for the month. There much is made in the investment community for sell in May and go away. And, you know, I thought it'd be fitting of us to maybe discuss some of these winners and losers of that story. Obviously, the S&P has added yet another year in which it's rendered that strategy moot. You know, these are special considerations that we're in these days, of course. And it's always something supposed to be a guide. It's not supposed to be anything used as creed. But I thought some of the notable gainers here were interesting. They're heavily biotech oriented. Those are some of the biggest gainers this month. You know, you have some of Mersana, Sorrento Therapeutics, Novavax. A lot of energy names did well, some even doubling in the month, as we saw some of the oil recovery. On the flip side of that oil recovery, obviously you're going to have tankers plummet because the demand for storage is gone. So, you know, you had, Scorpio, all those kind of down 30%, a lot of those Greek shipping names. Also have to worry about, hopefully if you did sell in May, you sold Hertz and you, LATAM Airlines. Those are the other, you know, two bankruptcies that followed JCPenney. And notably in Hertz, the rent-a-car company. Icon was famous for now, you know, racking up a billion-dollar loss there. But he's made it up with some of his other plays, no doubt. and, you know, a couple of interesting huge gainers, Camping World. You know, I don't know if we're all just fleeing to the wilderness now with virus concerns, but that doubled this month. And DraftKings, it's a new IPO, gambler's favorite, also nearly doubled, along with Penn National Gaming. Gambler's delight, and we're all fleeing into the woods.
Right, so people are fleeing into the woods to gamble on sports, which aren't happening. It makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you brought this back, Brad, to the 1 month. This is from All Star Charts. JC Peretz is the guy who runs that shop. In the last month, the sectors that have the biggest gains include the U.S. Aluminum Index, Recreational Services, Mortgage Finance Index, Home Construction Index. You know, this is sort of like the sub indices. But again, it is more the cyclicals, the growth oriented stuff. Of course, stuff that got hit the hardest and was already down prior to prior to the COVID crisis. But, you know, if you're looking for something to feel good about, it's that there is some rotation happening to some of these more cyclical names. Again, it's a bet that the economy is going to get back to normal sooner rather than later. And let's certainly hope that that's the case.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff I call the prepper trade, because it's stuff that preppers, if you're one of these people, buy, you know, like building shacks in the woods, weapons, canned goods, you know, a lot of things to build fallout shelters. Maybe that's the aluminum.
Well, on that note, you got marijuana names that also did pretty well this month too.
Yeah, that's also another thing. You know, you got
right. So we're going out to the woods to get high and bet on sports that aren't happening. If you're high, it makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way of closing here.
I think so. And when I say we, nobody on this call. Nobody on this
call. Of course.
Discussion. Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we look forward to speaking to you all again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to SeekingAlpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.